ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
I mean, why didn't they just use Harry Holt's high school nickname, Puss? These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
Search The Dead Can't Sue podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's resounding control over the Labor Party was on full display during the National Conference last week. But this public display of unity and solidarity could come with a political trade-off, as rebel backbencher Ed Husic warns the culture of debate isn't valued as it should be within the Labor Party. Meanwhile, 4 months out from the Victorian state election in November, a leadership spill against Labor leader Jacinda Allen is imminent, but the Premier won't go without a fight. She's vowing to keep fighting on. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvallis.
And I'm Jacob Greber. And if you hear an alert sound, a really, really alarming, noisy alert sound, now maybe you've already heard it by the time you hear this podcast, that is not a test. That's the Victorian government in serious trouble.
It's so bad. What did you call it? Sictoria.
Sictoria. Look, I'll get hate for that. It's not a fair comment on that lovely state and all the wonderful people who live there, but there is something sickly about the government. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having the conversation we're about to have.
No, that is correct. So we are, I am a Melburnian. I am a Victorian, proudly. I think it's one of the best states in the country. So like I said, one of the, because I visit every state and tell them that it's amazing there. Look, I am a proud Melburnian though, and I can tell you it is huge news and it is going to happen. I'm saying that with confidence because Jacinda Allen might be saying she wants to fight on as Labor Premier, but her support base has collapsed, and you cannot survive in my many years watching politics when that is the case. So it comes after a delegation of Labor ministers and MPs met with Jacinda Allen, the Victorian Premier, on Monday morning and urged her to step down, telling her she'd lost the majority support of the caucus. Why this is important is Jacinda Allen is from the left-wing dominant faction. They have the numbers. She's had a strong Praetorian Guard. But what this demonstrates is that her support has collapsed in the left. So her own faction now has failed to support her, although she, as we're recording, because this will now change throughout the day, that's what happens with politics. But at this stage, she's got this Praetorian Guard. There are some lefties that are standing by her, clearly emboldening her to argue that she will contest any leadership battle. This is the state of play as we record. She has done this very, very fancy footwork. I think it's a very interesting political play where she's written to the party's state secretary to say she will contest any leadership ballot, and they, Steve Stakos is his name, should be prepared for a rank and file vote. That's because that's the Labor Party system if it's a contested vote. Now, I say if because nobody wants there to be, because that would be a 6-week process, Jacob. The November election is looming.
And we're 4 months away from an election, aren't we?
And you'd have to have an acting premier. It's insanity, right? So what needs to happen, if they have a smooth transition, is that it's not contested. There's no leadership fight. She is suggesting she's going to stand. I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't at the end and that it's all a bit of smoke and mirrors, because if she knows, I mean, you and I have been around long enough to remember when Kevin Rudd didn't even stand when he was rolled. His support had collapsed so much he could not even put himself up as a candidate, right? So I think that's likely to happen, although she ain't going down quietly, is she?
Well, so I want to ask you about this because you know this state infinitely better than I do. Other than to say last week, you and I were both at the Federal Labor Conference in Adelaide, And it was one of those scenes where you see who's on the up and who's on the down, if you like. Malinowskis was, you know, the host. He gave the speech that really stole the show on the day when they opened. He was, you know, I think people were sort of wowed by him. There were the other ones who were sort of solid, like your Cook, Minns, I guess, to a lesser extent. But then Alan was there, and just the body language with the way she was walking around when I saw her. This is very anecdotal, very imprecise, but you could feel the difference in, I guess, the halo around each of these leaders. Patricia, why is she hanging on? Why is she putting up a fight?
As it now seems she is. I think it's character, column A, column B. I think it's a character thing. So what happens is often you'll find political leaders don't go quietly. They find it very hard to read the tea leaves and sort of go, okay, I'm going to fall on my sword. And so it's not surprising to me that she's hanging on for dear life. She feels like she's been undermined. She feels like Ben Carroll, who is her deputy, who only very recently made an extraordinarily stupid statement that will absolutely dog him if he emerges as the next premier, where he said he will not be rolling Jacinda Allen because, you know, he's got a daughter and he doesn't want, you know, her to see him roll her, i.e. the feminist merits of it, yeah? Why did he say that? Why did he say that? When just in such a short time frame, the man is doing exactly that. Now, this is how he's explaining it so far. He's gone to X. I mean, Elon Musk's platform is still the place where the Labour Party likes to make their announcements. Makes me laugh. But anyway, he says, a group of my colleagues have approached me today to inform me that Jacinda Allen no longer has the support of our caucus and have asked me to nominate for the leadership of the Victorian Parliamentary Labour Party. I went on about asked me because I'm going to get back into this, okay? It is clear that the Premier has lost the majority of our caucus. As such, I have since visited the Premier to inform her that I will be nominating for the leadership of the Labour Party. He said the decision is not easy, but the stakes at the upcoming election are simply too high. And this line, the prospect of a Liberal One Nation government that will cut schools, health and frontline services is simply too high a risk to ignore. His framing is key there. They've come to me. They've asked me.
I'm not the one doing the tearing
correct.
Down.
I am not the instigator.
You know, woe is me. I'm being dragged along here by the people in my caucus. It looks to me like she is effectively challenging those folks, put up or shut up. I'm not going to roll over. If you want to take my job, you've got to tear me down and all the consequences of that. That will come from a leader who's torn down rather than a leader who goes. Always makes a big, big difference.
Always makes a huge political difference.
And especially, I guess, at the election. I mean, there's been a couple of other states where we've seen this sort of thing as governments get towards, well, we never know at the time, but when you look back, you realise that was really when they were in their dying gasp. New South Wales, they churned through some leaders and then the Liberal Party won. Same in Queensland. They didn't churn through a lot of leaders, but they got rid of Anastasia Palaszczuk and went to Stephen Miles. And that was a bit further out, obviously. The thing that's interesting here is they're doing it so close to the election, 4 months to go. And each time, you could argue it actually worked out for the Labor Party in those states because, I mean, you don't know the history that didn't happen, but in both examples, Labor lost quite solidly, but not in a way that ruined the entire outfit. They were able to come back in subsequent elections and be very, very competitive. What they hadn't allowed to happen is what the Liberal Party has often had in both state jurisdictions and right now federally. They get smashed to the point where they then really struggle to be an effective opposition and then people write them off. Is that what's behind this move, or is Alan effectively saying she's the one who can save the furniture in Victoria?
Well, she won't even go to saving the furniture concepts, even internally, right? She's, I think, a little deluded. If you look at her numbers, they're diabolical. Like, they are bloodbath level. I mean, that's just
And that's
a
when
fact.
You have that deep fabric, that damage to the fabric of the party, and you wipe out all the talent of another generation, or you then don't have people who are any good on a front bench position in opposition, and that's where parties then get into a death spiral.
That's right. Look, the saving the furniture strategy is definitely what's going on here, though. The Labor right candidate in Ben Carroll, if he ends up being the only candidate, this stage Jacinta Allen says she's going to contest. She may have changed her mind by the end of the day. The left might come up with another concept of, there's other options for them to give their, because they do have the numbers left, remember. Although I think at this stage, just my own analysis is, it would be very unwise to spend 6 weeks with an acting premier sending a message, I think, to Victorians that they can't even govern themselves. You know, you can see the campaign written for the Liberal Party. They can't even manage a transition, right? So I think it's a high-risk strategy to go down that road, which is why she's threatening it, because she thinks maybe they'll all get scared and think, we can't do that. They've clearly called her bluff, though, by Ben Carroll officially nominating and saying he's going to run. He's called her bluff. He knows her numbers have collapsed, and they have. There's no doubting that. So there's that part of it. And then I think the more interesting part for me, let's say Ben Carroll emerges as the premier, which could happen tomorrow, okay, when they have actually an official leadership battle or is the only candidate if she pulls out.
So Parliament's back, Victorian Parliament's back, isn't it, yeah, after the winter break, and tomorrow is the first opportunity where they're all in the room together.
Yeah, where the leadership is spilt officially, right? And if it's contested, it has to go to the rank and file. It's a very long process. But if it's not, because the Labor Party has a way of a lot of people beating their chests, and that's why I use the Rudd example, then things happening very neatly, as we saw with the federal conference, which we can get to in a moment. Very neat. So, I'm saying this on a Monday morning, having watched and known this party for so long, I'm telling you, watch how neat it could get, right? But right now it's not neat as we go to air. So let me tell you what has to happen and what will happen. The biggest problem for Labor, if you go to anyone in Victoria, and I can say this with absolute confidence, lefties, right-wingers, anyone, is this sense of stink around this government, and that is very problematic for them, right? So how do you draw a line over that, under that? Jacinta Allen is thought of and known as too close an ally to Daniel Andrews. She was part of the big build as a minister before she became premier. The big build and its links with the CFMEU are at the centre of a lot of the Labor Party's crisis. One of the things he will do is call a royal commission into the big build, right? That'll be kind of a signature, we're taking it seriously, she didn't, I am. And I think that kind of allows them at least to send a message to the electorate that they are prepared to clean up their act and prepared to investigate themselves, if you like through a powerful royal commission. I don't think it'll save them, but I think it will help them. What do you think?
So this is the argument that if they let it roll, the Liberals win, they will put in a royal commission that might be much, much tougher, have a much, much nastier set of terms of reference. In brackets, I always think, watch out, because royal commissions are unpredictable, and there might be quite a lot of businesses actually that would get tangled up in that corruption story, because there's always two sides of this dance.
Oh, yeah, it could be ugly for a lot of people, Jacob.
It's a tango. There are two sides. There are risks there, so the Royal Commission thing, do voters in Victoria then sit back and go, yeah, that's good enough for us. We're happy now. I don't think so. You're making that cynical face.
I am, because I agree with you. I don't think voters go, oh, okay, you fixed it.
Yeah.
But I do think it can assist you in sending a signal that you're no longer going to keep sort of avoiding it or finding.
And it might bring
Band-Aids.
Some of those voters back who are just sick of it. Oh, yeah, they are having a go. Royal commissions before big government, big elections that tend to be changes of government. There's a long history of those. The most famous, of course, is the Fitzgerald Royal Commission in Queensland, which Joe thought he was appointing a friendly judge, quote unquote, one of theirs. And it turned out he was quite, he put them to the sword, and all the rest is history. So we'll see where this one goes. It's the whole CFMEU thing really is a problem that doesn't seem to go away. And I would say, and we can talk about this, you know, what does this mean for the federal government, the federal Labor government, the federal Labor brand? I suspect the conventional wisdom, and you might have a different view, PK, is that if you did have a Liberal government or a Liberal One Nation government, that might be the dream ticket for federal Labor, because then they can point to what they would hope would be a new kind of dysfunction. They can then contrast themselves as this competent federal outfit.
Well, that's what federal Labor people have told me wall to wall, every conversation. That's what they hope will happen.
Yeah. Although I'm a little bit skeptical about that, because I do think some of these problems, and you've just talked about them, you've talked about the big build, how Jacinta Allen's tied to that, as is Dan Andrews. Well, who is closer to those two federally than any other leader you can think of? It's Anthony Albanese. So I'm not entirely convinced that works out the way people think it works out. I know in general, if you have a party that's opposite to yours in a different jurisdiction, that often works out really well. Queensland's a great example, isn't it? People got it off their liver, their anger, and then they came back to the Labor Party in the federal election. And I'm sure that's what they're hoping.
And as we do a lot of, you know, talking about, you know, voters and low information voters, I think we underestimate how savvy voters are, because they consistently see the differences in the brands, state and federal. They just do, or consistently. I think your point about Queensland is a fantastic one. Look at them electing the Crisafulli government, but yet, you know, clearly not being fans of the federal Dutton brand. You know, like, it's they see and they make judgments, and they're not mugs, right? Anyway, this is unfolding. I'll be covering it on Afternoon Briefing. Hopefully most of you watch that. If you don't, you're missing out. And it'll, you know, by tomorrow, I think it's likely we'll have another premier. But again, I might be eating humble pie, and they might be a 6-week ballot. And if there is, good luck to you, Labor Party. Raph Epstein and I will bring you an in-depth update on all of this in tomorrow's podcast. He's, of course, from ABC Radio Melbourne, the perfect person to have on the pod. So let's move to the federal. Although we just touched on it, it's kind of very linked here, because Jacinta Allen was at the ALP National Conference, where you and I hung out, Jacob, and had a lovely time in Adelaide, where you kept telling me it's the best city, you love it, it's so beautiful, you want to move there, like something happened to you. You got a little bit mesmerised by Adelaide, didn't you?
Yeah, I did like Adelaide, actually. I haven't spent much time there. I've just been listening to East Coast propaganda about how it's boring and nothing going on there. And actually, it's quite a cool place.
Look, the smartest people come from Adelaide, in my experience. But anyway, lots of Greeks in Adelaide too. Shout out to my people. Okay, certainly more unity on display at the National Labor Conference, which wrapped up on the weekend. Albanese's total psychological control, not just the numbers, but it's a psychological hold he has over the party, I'm going to make this case, I think was incredible. We both wrote pieces about that, you know, similar sort of vibes, few differences, but similar vibes of what we saw. Ed Husic was really the only lone dissenting voice, and he makes some points about, you know, worrying about what that means for the party. He attempted to amend the party platform to take a tougher line at Israel in relation to the conflict in Gaza and the West Bank. It failed on Saturday. He has warned that Labor is becoming allergic to dissent. From what you've seen as an analyst of such shenanigans, is this a party allergic to dissent, or are they managing dissent?
No, I think they're managing dissent. There's always dissent. It's just that everyone is now part of the settlement as it currently stands. And the prize is, of course, you get to be in government, you get to make big changes, you get to be ministers, you get to have influence. And the unions, I think, are on board with that settlement, because it's a government that's really giving them pretty much everything they've asked for. There was a new Fair Work Court announced. There's lots of money for home building that keeps the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union happy. The ACTU loves that Fair Work Court. There was motions passed to ensure or make possible sovereign energy for Future Made in Australia projects. That's another one the Electrical Trades Union likes. So bit by bit, it's a government that's delivering to its base, which is the union movement in the context of a national conference. And you're so right. The Prime Minister's dominance over his caucus, we've talked about that before. It's really quite absolute. And he's also demonstrated he can do that with the membership, the broader labour movement as well. And so as long as he keeps delivering those wins to that constituency, I think someone like an Ed Husic will be a very lonely person.
He is lonely. Although he does get told, and I believe from my own conversations that some of this is correct from some of his colleagues, that they do agree with some of his views, and I think that probably buoys him.
It probably does, but they don't come out, you know, over the parapet with him, and B, he's been unable to, there's some exceptions. There was, for instance, the push on the gas tax idea. He did have a, you know, prominent union figures, both from the left and the right, stand up with him. But when it comes to the floor, when it comes to moving motions, they all disappeared on him. And you've got to bring people with you. And I think until and when that happens, this is almost becomes an academic debate as to what happens, how much change is possible in this Labor government with this leadership.
Yeah. And I think the point you make about they feel like the leadership is delivering for them is a key one, because the prism in which people come to this from is the assumption that they don't feel like they're delivering for them. But if you look at some of these signature issues that, you know, progressive people, if I could put it broadly, care about, you know, tax reform, redesigning the tax system to favour, you know, taxing passive wealth more than, you know, the money you make from just having a job, that's all happening. So I reckon they do feel like perhaps the direction is broadly right. Yeah?
Yeah, and the stage three tax cuts, you know, that was another big moment. And you had the outgoing president of the Labor Party, Wayne Swan, making that point that was, in his view, quite a radical thing to do in political terms, and was the opposite of what he condemns as timid centrism, I think is the word he uses. This is a Labor Party machine at the federal level that is humming. It's extremely efficient. It's crunching through these really difficult problems without massive dissent and argument that is visible. They're sorting these things out in the forums where you and I don't get to sit. But the effectiveness of it is there on display. They've won an enormous majority with a version of this kind of approach, and they're going to continue down that road. And I think what the critics are suggesting is they may miss that critical information, they may miss that debate that opens them up to what the broader population's thinking about. Remember, the Labor Party's primary is still only 30%. That's enough to win with preferences, but the version of the Labor Party that was on display in Adelaide is a version that are currently, on a very, very good day, gets about 30% of the vote.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then there's a broader argument, which is for another day in another podcast, about, you know, whether really broad-based political parties can be a thing. I wonder, actually, in a more polarised, more tribalised world, whether, yeah, maybe I'm too cynical, maybe I'm missing something, but I think it's very hard to have the kind of numbers that the Labor Party and the Liberal Party used to enjoy in a two-party system. I think that might be over, as a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And what do you think?
Well, I've sort of had a feeling that that's where it's been headed for quite a long time, and we've certainly discussed it. And so I think Labor is positioning itself to try and survive and have longevity in that kind of a world. So there are things like, you know, the motion on voluntary assisted suicide that was pushed by the progressive left-wing side of the party. I don't think the Prime Minister's a fan of it. In fact, he's said as much, but it prevailed anyway. It still got there. So he does allow for these things to bubble up, and it keeps the settlement in place.
So let's move to a more problematic sort of section of life for the Prime Minister, and I want to set it up this way for you. Remember when Pauline Hanson, not that long ago, went to Sicily, and there are questions about her relationship with Gina Reinhart and whether Gina Reinhart's paying for all of these things. You know, all One Nation's really told us is not one cent of taxpayer money has gone towards that trip. Okay, well, where did the cents come from? Reasonable question. I say that because then a story emerges and the Prime Minister faces some heat over a dinner in a Point Piper mansion hosted by 25-year-old Felix Lee. Now, he's part of a billionaire family with his father facing allegations of tax office deception. The PM was very evasive when asked about this on Insiders yesterday. He says he attends lots of dinners. I make the backstory about the Gina Reinhart thing to say scrutiny must be fair, and I am glad to see scrutiny on the Labor Party's donations and dealings as well. He didn't seem a great fan of these questions though, Jacob, am I right?
Well, he was asked by our colleague David Spears yesterday what, you know, in effect, what was this all about? You know, he must have known that question was coming because this has been all over the news. There's no way he wouldn't have been prepared. His answer was, well, I go to a lot of meetings and I'm not going to talk about them. I don't think that really passes muster. This is potentially a lot of money that we're talking about. The question, and I've heard other Labor figures say things like this in the context of, you know, Pauline Hanson getting an aeroplane from Gina Reinhart. What is it that Gina Reinhart wants from that? What is it that she expects to get from that sort of a donation? Well, I think the same question applies here. What is it that this particular family and this particular young man expects to get by hosting an event for the Prime Minister that raises money? And I think if it's just dismissed with a blithe, well, I have lots of private meetings and this is none of your business, that's quite a corrosive place to leave it, I think, because I think it is a perfectly legitimate question. What is it that people think they're getting out of these types of donations?
I'm glad you made it more broad, though. Generally,
as a general principle, I don't know the ins and outs of this particular case, but we keep it at a general point. There is a lot of big money in politics. We've got new disclosure rules that are coming in that are meant to address some of the community's concerns about how opaque all the disclosures are, because by opaque, I mean they take a hell of a long time. You know, 18 months can even go by before you get the numbers and who it went to. So this is not money that goes directly to the Prime Minister who was there. This goes to the Labor Party. And I think Tanya Plibersek was making that point this morning on radio. This is a donation to the Labor Party.
And also, sorry, we don't know if the donation's been made yet.
We also don't know that. Yeah. That's based on reporting. So we have to be careful there.
So might not be made. We'll find out. You know, like, but he says he goes to a lot. I mean, he's been upfront about that, actually. Like, yeah, that's what political leaders do, because we do have donations in our system. We don't have entirely publicly funded. We get some public funding for our elections, but then there's a debate about whether we want that. And a lot of people would not want that, by the way. I've heard it. Knee-jerk reaction. We don't want the taxpayer paying more for these people to get elected. And so there is resistance to that idea too. There is, however, yeah, there is a cost.
That's sort of the Pauline Hanson defence, isn't it? That my travels didn't cost the taxpayers a cent. Fair enough.
All right. Final point before we say goodbye and I run around trying to work out what's happening in the Victorian Labor Party. Let me take you to this. Another day for our opposition leader, Angus Taylor, to have to hose down suggestions. You can almost feel sorry for this man. This is all they do, of a coalition with One Nation. Now, this happened because Andrew Bragg, who's actually a sort of moderate in the Liberal front bench, but answered a question that I don't know what your view is, but it seemed more clumsy to me than intent, but maybe I'm missing something. He left the door open, though, definitely to entering a coalition with One Nation after the next election, although, you know, he's not.
Yeah, said they'd be I think he said the word pragmatic. That'd be pragmatic, yeah, depending on where the numbers, yeah, fall. I was a bit surprised to hear this from Andrew Bragg myself. He is, as you say, I think one of the leading moderate voices now in the Liberal Party. He's been very quick to say things like this wouldn't happen in the past, hasn't he? Really, even in the recent few weeks and months, when I think, for instance, Tony Passon raised this as a, you know, raised the idea of a more formal alliance where they divide up the seats and don't have three-way contests. Get me wrong here, but I think Bragg was one of the ones who said that was not a good idea. So,
yeah.
Did he misspeak in that classic sort of political, I did a blunder type thing, as James Patterson is suggesting he did? Or is it saying the quiet bit out loud, which is that it sits there in the same way that for Labor, when Labor is close to minority governments or indeed in minority, it ends up having to work with the Greens in the lower house?
Yeah, I think that version, because the truth is, and it might be uncomfortable for some people who don't like this, but the truth is that you have to deal with the numbers you're dealt with. And so even though politically for a moderate to say this, it's a bit weird, I agree. Like, it's, you know, you can see why people are jumping on it. It's the statement of the bleeding obvious. I mean, if One Nation theoretically delivered 20 seats to the parliament, and Labor was absolutely had lost, but the Liberals had another, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
50. Guess what? Like, would they force Australians to go to an election again because they didn't like One Nation? I don't think that's a good outcome either, by the way. Yeah. I don't think it's very respectful to how people voted. That's that part too.
It's just the difference, isn't it, though? You could argue that Labor in the end of that last term, especially the 18 months leading up to last year's election, campaigned. We didn't see it that much where we were, but in Canberra, in your case, Melbourne, but they campaigned fiercely against the Greens in some of those seats. In fact, Melbourne, yes, Adam Bandt lost his seat. In Queensland, they lost two seats. So Labor was quietly sending the message, no, you vote for us or Greens. There's no in between. And I think the problem for Angus Taylor is going to be, does he maintain the argument that he can do it, you know, in his own right, that the Liberal Party and the Nationals can do it in their own right, in a way to then bring more people back to that fold, make that tent bigger? Or does he make it very, very easy for people to vote One Nation because, well, he's sort of saying they'll be in cahoots with them. So, yeah, I may as well.
He definitely, I'm in the James Patterson school. I don't think Andrew Bragg is desperate to be in a coalition with One Nation. Sometimes the thing about Andrew Bragg is he just tells you, like, as I said, the math, he was answering on the maths and the maths is correct. But of course, that's not the position that you want to put forward. And so it's kind of reality versus your positioning and the messages you want to send out. And that, my friend, is the disconnect. And I kind of get why people have jumped on it, but I also can't help love politicians that kind of tell you the truth, which is what
quiet
he's done
bit
here.
Out loud.
He has.
Bless him.
Welcome to the hardcore arithmetic of the way parliaments work. You get delivered the numbers and you have to deal with them. That's it for politics now for today. Jacob, I won't lie. I do like a spill. I will admit that. I like watching spills.
Sounds
like
it's going to be all your Christmases this next 24 hours in Victoria.
That doesn't mean I support, just in case you're confused. People make up their own minds, but I do like covering a spill, so I'm going to go off and do that.
Well, good luck with all of that. We'll be watching from afar.
Thank you. Raph Epstein joins me tomorrow for the latest on what happened in Victoria. And if you have a question for us, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. And Fran and I will answer it. See you, Jacob.
See you, Patricia.